This is Critical Nonsense, our high lowbrow show about culture, science, and tech. This week, Alex Anderson and Steven Ebert join us for our new segment, Six Handshakes.
Oh, hello. I don't know how I wound up in "Oh, hello" as my intro.
It's become a pattern.
Yeah, this is what a Joey sounds like is where I should start. This is what an executive producer and literati member, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
And in a very fun quarantine experiment today, we have Twitterati guests in their own right, Steven Ebert and Alex Anderson here to join us in making a mess is really how I think. Steven, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, good evening. This is what I sound like.
In your bedroom.
In my bedroom.
And Alex.
Oh, incredibly honored. This is Alex. Thank you.
This is what... let me clear my throat. Jess, do we have any housekeeping? Rate, review, subscribe, I think, is really where it all begins. And then from there, anything else?
From there might be more things. I mean, since we've shifted to remote recording, we're definitely experimenting with every recording and new episode. So now is the best time to send us your thoughts. If one of us sounds way better than the other, then we can figure out our mic situations. Anything, any other thoughts you have would be helpful to share.
Yeah, I will also say Alex Contal is a magician and has been able to make the podcast happen remotely. We do lose a little bit of the sort of rhythm of the podcast because Alex has to cut four different streams together, but thank you for still listening. And now, Jess, it's time to introduce this really silly experiment this that we are silly. Going to entertain today.
This is very silly.
I've never been more excited.
Truly, I've never been more excited.
This is the most excited we've been. Introducing Six Handshakes. It's a new segment that we're going to test out for the very first time on this show. It involves our three hosts, Joey, Steven, and Alex. It involves six tweets, two from each of them from various far-flung reaches of the internet. And I will be playing the all-powerful arbiter, keeping track of points that count for nothing, and also trying to interject with completely arbitrary factoids that hopefully none of them will know about as we go along. The way this will work is that one of our hosts will start sharing one of their tweets. We'll try to understand it as much as we can, and we'll go popcorning around until we've covered all six tweets. And by the end, we're going to try to figure out the 6 degrees of separation, or otherwise known as six handshakes, between each of those tweets and see if there's a through line between all of them, even if it's very tenuous.
My personal preference is Kevin Bacon, but I mean, that's just me.
It's very funny because I was about to say, like Kevin Costner. I couldn't remember which Kevin it was. So, right.
The 6 degrees of Kevin Costner.
Yeah. It's just the 6 degrees of Kevin is kind of nice.
6 degrees of Kevin. Whatever your Kevin is.
Whatever your Kevin needs are.
Whoever your Kevin is, we all have a personal Kevin.
Yeah, we're find 6 degrees your Kevin.
Away from. So let's not dally too long. I think.
But dilly
we,
all day.
Right. Strange. Okay. Well.
Wise.
But I'd like to popcorn Joey to begin.
Oh, you're
with
gonna...
our first tweet.
Okay, what are we, where are we at? Okay, so.
This
is a tweet from a gentleman named Stance Grounded at _SJPeace_.
Shout out.
That is LMAO, I love the internet. And it is a video of a woman that took a video from Now What, I believe. Is that what the... Yeah, it was about, you know, all of the people...
Fox News.
It was a Fox News
segment. Fox News.
It was a Now What video about a Fox News segment where people were doing the protests about we hate quarantine and we want to die. And the video involved a woman demonstrating how terrible her gray roots were and said, I just need to get my hair done. Now, some woman on the internet in her abundance of free time, which she is pretty transparent about, went through the process of investigating how long it had been since the woman from the Fox News segment had dyed her hair. It turns out, based on a series of investigations, based on the average length of how fast hair grows, the average length of a woman's finger, she was able to deduce that while this woman was complaining in April about not being able to do her hair, that she hadn't done her hair since October.
Oh, man. Oh. Truly unbelievable. Disappointing. Heartbreaking.
I cannot tell you how insanely like delighted in like the tickly nerd core of my being I was where she was cutting the video to like get the length of her finger and then cutting off her finger and moving it next to her roots to show how long her hair had been growing. I was like, yep, the math checks out. She has like an equation that she's slowly revealing as she unwhites out her math on how she demonstrated. She's like doing long division on a piece of scratch paper. I'm like, this is good.
It's magical. My favorite thing about this is the Fox News clip. It's from, if you watch the full clip, they have three people interviewed and two of them are, you know, obviously delusional. And the third is Tim Robinson, the comedian who had that show on Netflix, I Think You Should Leave, used to be on SNL, wrote for Comedy Central forever. playing one of these people, playing one of these, you know, conservative people who want to break out of quarantine. Yelling about Halloween candy, and it's absolutely wonderful, and it brings me...
I can't buy my Halloween costume.
Yes.
This is so the time good. Where I start buying my Halloween costume. What do you want me to not buy my Halloween costume?
That's actually exactly what it sounds like. Very good job. And I am going to take this opportunity to popcorn myself.
Wait, there...
Oh, sorry, Jess, were you going to... I didn't mean to cut you off.
I just wanted to make a... I just wanted to ask a question.
Please.
About... the Halloween costume. Are you talking about someone in April was saying that they are concerned that they're not able to plan in advance their Halloween costume for this October?
Yes, but it was a bit he was playing. It's a comedian, cool. Actor who I don't know what you call that, like bombed the news station. Well, that means something else. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and popcorn myself. Jess, should I just like, I have the tweet up in front of me. Do you want to put it on the screen? Okay, so this is from user Cake Batter. At check-in _ patty, so chicken patty spelled incorrectly, which I find really funny. And the tweet is, if my boyfriend was a worm, I'd cut him in half so I could have two boyfriends. And this does have almost 360,000 likes. I'm curious if anyone knows what's being referenced in this tweet.
I can tell you I saw this tweet. And I didn't know what was happening.
Okay.
Alex, did you know what was happening here?
I also saw this tweet. No idea. I am so intrigued that this is a reference.
Yes. So this is a reference. This is in reference to a TikTok meme, which involves women asking their boyfriends, would you still love me if I was a worm? And it is a hashtag, would you still love me if I was a worm? It may be slightly shorter, but it's just a series of videos of women holding up their phones to their boyfriends and then very earnest asking, if I was a worm, would you still love me? Documenting the boyfriend's reaction. This is like everything I love about TikTok. And this tweet is everything I love about Twitter in that it's like incredibly self-referential. And taking that like professorial tone of like, if my boyfriend was a worm, I'd simply cut him in half so I could have two boyfriends. So a tweet that I love dearly.
Jess, who doesn't participate in either Twitter or TikTok, was like, I sent her my tweet and was like, here's my first one. And she was like, but this has a TikTok video in it. It's supposed to be Twitter. We said it was going to be Twitter.
We said
you made
it was
a point.
A tweet.
You made a point that this was coming from Twitter. I was like, it doesn't work like that. It just everything is everything now.
The internet is all the internet.
Yeah. Oh
Can I just make a point here, Stephen? Because, you know, you may know a lot about tweets, but I know a little about worms.
Oh, yes. And, okay.
Did you know that the panther worm is one of the most commonly known ones to regenerate? And if you go to the Wikipedia for the panther worm, it's a very, very brief description. But the final sentence, as they describe the panther worm, they say, they have a simple nervous system and a bowel sac with no way out. What does that mean?
A bowel sac.
Does that mean
no
that they just they collect? Did they collect all of their bowel movements for their whole lives? I mean,
and with no way out. That's so ominous. Is somebody stuck in there?
That's a great reason to get cut in half and leave your bowel sac behind.
It's a Rupi Kaur poem. I am a bowel sack with no way out. Yeah, agree, Rupi. Thank you.
What I do want to know about this is I want to know more about Chicken Patty. Like, is this like one of those moments where you just had one tweet and it just exploded? Or is Chicken Patty a regular recurring, like, weird Twitter character that is just always coming up with TikTok referential tweets?
It was a one viral tweet. She's got sub 6K followers. She had one that took off and
the one hit wonder.
Yeah.
Actually, is there a name for that? A Twitter user who has a one hit wonder?
I don't know. I will say that referencing TikToks is probably a brilliant Twitter strategy.
Yeah.
We're gonna become famous is what I think we're
Stay
learning
ready.
From this.
Stay ready.
Okay, who's next?
Jess, do you want to pull up my other tweet? I think it relates through the method of boyfriends.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh. Yes, this is amazing. I love this.
What I also love about this is, you know, you just showed something with 375,000 Twitter likes. This tweet has 25 likes. I don't know how it wound up on my feed, but it somehow did. So it's a tweet from someone named at Christy ECF and Eastern College Football. I don't know. Remember Enormous Baby? ?
I don't want to.
This is him now. Feel old yet? We'll share these tweets so you can look them up in the show notes. But first of all, Enormous Baby. It took me a while to figure out who Enormous Baby was. And this is one of the sort of absurdity of self-referential like memes that you were talking about, Stephen. I was like, who is Enormous Baby? Like, why is Enormous Baby a thing? So it's a photo of Enormous Baby, which was apparently just a TikTok that became extremely popular because there's like an 18-month-old baby that looks like he's like 12.
I'm sorry. It became popular because the world collectively agreed that they wanted to fight the oversized baby. I don't know if the oversized baby is what brought the world together. It is the urge to fight it that brought the world together.
The urge to fight the oversized baby?
To fist fight the baby, yes.
Okay, so continue. Yeah, I just have a lot of thoughts on Gavin, the giant baby, who is in fact a three-year-old. That is a three-year-old child who is 43 inches tall.
What the heck? He can like basically ride all the rides.
That is correct.
Did you know? I just have to let you know that the average car seat height limit recommended is 4'9". And so if this baby was that tall, he might not have been able to sit in a proper car
seat. He was probably in the front seat strapped in.
I mean, there was a lot of discourse around Giant Baby this week, specifically the semiotic
enormous
use.
Baby
enormous baby, giant baby, however you want to term him. A lot of the things I've been reading about large child is that the semiotic cues that make him both seem larger and more infant like than he actually is. It's the fact that like he has very blonde hair that's very short that makes him look like he's like a fresh child. Also, but like, he is wearing a diaper that appears to be slightly too small, and he's like riding on the back of an adult. It looks like, you know, the way someone would ride a horse. There are so many things about Giant Baby that just kind of startle the senses. So I have been very much part of the coalition that wants to fight and or destroy Giant Baby. His name is Gavin, but I don't want to distract from the tweet, which is also referencing a very crucial pop culture feature.
Yeah, Joey, we have to understand what else is here.
So this tweet is also comparing Enormous Baby to a gentleman from the show 90 Day Fiancé who has no neck.
Very cool.
I think that is the best way to describe him. It is a man whose head is, his chin is attached directly to his sternum.
Yeah.
So fucked.
And
it just sort of rests in between his collarbones, you know, like it just floats in that area.
Do you remember when Gray, the ad agency, did that campaign to show like what a human body that could like withstand a car crash would have to be built like in order to survive? It was like a campaign, I think, for Volvo
creatures.
And it was like they had to make this like decrepit looking thing that had like a bone structure similar to what an airbag did, and it was a commercial for like Volvo's safe airbags. And until humans are like this, we still need airbags. It looks like this man. Like, this is what looks like.
That might be the most cruel thing I've ever heard in my life.
Brutal.
The reason I was so excited about this was to introduce Jess to the show, which, by the way, I've never seen. I only know through the fact that like it's become a thing, which is 90 Day Fiancé.
Amazing.
Which is a show about effectively a loophole in the immigration system where someone who is engaged to be married can bring their fiancé to the United States for 90 days and before they get married. And if they haven't got married in 90 days, they have to leave. And so the whole show is built around this premise where it's basically mail order husbands and brides fighting against the stigma of mail order husbands and brides. And this gentleman also has been popular in other memes because before he went to meet his mail order fiance for the first time, was slathering mayonnaise on his hair and scalp condition it.
That's tasty. Followers of the show will remember that we didn't believe anyone could outpace Colt and Larissa for their ability to startle and alarm viewers, and yet this man's mayonnaise ritual was somehow able to do that.
He was
shocking.
Actually using a spatula to rub mayonnaise on his hair. Like it's
devastating.
You know, it wasn't like he was using some kind of like grooming. I don't even know what you would use for a grooming tool, like a comb, a brush. I don't know what the appropriate way to apply mayonnaise to one's hair is, but he was using basically like a cake batter spatula.
I feel like in the same way Steven describes the semiotics of this baby being so disturbing is also the same reason why mayonnaise already does not belong in my personal sense of what a normal hair care routine would look like. But then when you add in the spatula, it just makes it so much more obvious it doesn't belong there.
Yeah, this guy's tough. I mean, I'm curious. I don't know if we're tangenting and actually talking about these topics as well, but I'm very curious about how we feel about shows like 90 Day Fiancé, like the world they exist in reality TV, of like the line between, is this exploitative or is this really lovely? Like what is the line between watching like terrible shows where people are acting their worst to these things where, like, you know, in some of these cases, you're like, you feel devastated for these people, and yet it's very, very good television. And so where do we draw that line?
I don't know. Have any of them killed their billionaire husbands? That's my first question. If they have, I feel less bad. If they haven't, then sort of like, let them have their moment in pop culture. I would love to see a reality TV show called The Mayonnaise Ritual every Friday afternoon.
I do want to see them. Yeah. You know, that's and really one other point. Thing, if you want to learn more about our thoughts on exploitative TV, you can go to episode 70 that we recorded in February, The Merits of Jargon and Exploitative TV. We talked a little bit about this on this very show. So, Steven, come on. Go with the game.
Wow.
What a great pitch. And effectively saying, none of that. None of that, Everett.
I want to hear, Alex, you pitch right now. Your Friday afternoon television show comes on after Ellen.
Right.
The mayonnaise. What did you call it? The mayonnaise ritual?
Yeah, it's starring this guy. Honestly, I've never seen the show. I don't know who he is. I don't like him. But I'm interested in what, you know, his namesake show would be. It's called The Mayonnaise Ritual. It's a Friday afternoon show. So it's, you know, you only really watch it if you're sick at home or if you've recently thrown up. But
Jerry Springer.
Exactly. Yeah. The premise is very simple. It's just coating various objects in mayonnaise, then putting them in the freezer. And then once the mayonnaise has frozen, you continue to coat it and you see how far you can get. And then once it's large enough, you mold it into a sphere. And then you shine that sphere until it glows. And honestly, the entire show is a story of the beauty that is intrinsic to humanity. You know, we're talking about, wow, he's so ugly. Right. He has no neck. But in reality, like what can you do with that lump of mayonnaise? Like, have you ever thought about it?
It's unique chemical properties.
I don't think you're giving him a chance, you know? Like if he only had a show.
I just want to say before we popcorn that I had another tweet that was Mark Warner, the senator from Virginia, making a tuna melt sandwich in the microwave was one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen, and it involved an absurd amount of mayonnaise.
Wow, I'm disgusted.
The only thing I would like to say about this is I would like to petition, instead of calling it the mayonnaise ritual, calling it the aioli protocol, which I just...
Oh, that's incredible.
I think that could go a long way.
Yeah. Feels like
it's more of a nighttime drama, a primetime drama.
That's an adult swim show, easily.
Yeah. A chef turned spy.
A dramatic procedural of the mayonnaise ritual.
I would like to raise my hand for a tweet. Tweet. Okay. I'm still having I'm trying to come to terms with how this tweet connects to one of my tweets, but I'd like to do the... Jess, you got me? I'd like to do the Haymarket tweet. And I will explain why. So remember Enormous Baby?
Yes.
Let's talk...
How could we forget?
Let's talk Enormous Fortune. I was thinking about which tweets to involve in this exercise, as, you know, Twitter is near and dear to my heart. And I made the assumption that both Joey and Ebert would both bring weird Twitter to the forefront of our conversation, which directed me to maybe a tweet that is a bit more activist-y. I'm a huge fan of Haymarket Books. If you don't know of them, they are an independent bookstore in Chicago. I think they're owned by, it's like a project of the Center for Economic Research in the city. And they have a very distinct and progressive point of view on Twitter. And they tweeted just this past week, it looks like, "Have you ever considered the possibility that Jeff Bezos just works 130 billion times harder than you do?" I have not considered that, mainly because I'm not a fan of Jeff Bezos. And 130 billion times harder. I mean, we went from this like weird Twitter moment to this very serious moment in this conversation that I'd like to fully embrace, that the CEO wealth gap is increasing and is a travesty, and it's, you know, hurting the livelihood of the world. And we should talk about it and shame CEOs who make that much money. So shame on you, Jeff Bezos.
So what if I wanted to say that I'm actually pro Bezos?
Oh, tell us more. No. Can we have this conversation?
What if I just wanted to throw a wrench in things and say that I'm not anti-Bezos? I think that
I love robber barons.
I mean, I think anyone who knows me would say I have at best a fraught relationship with capitalism. But I will say I err on the side of trusting Jeff Bezos, given an article in The Atlantic I read 6 weeks ago. I am fully being the trope of the basic premise that, like, the whole plan with Jeff Bezos, like, the whole question of, like, this wealth gap is not of the wealth gap. The whole question of CEOs who, like, make wealth from their workers, that, like, there is a disproportionate relationship to the value that workers provide relative to what they're paid. Kind of a function of two things with Bezos. One, that, like, most of his wealth is tied up in stock of a company that, like, increases in value, and that necessarily isn't a function of like wrongdoing on his part relative to, like, some CEOs, as well as the idea that the way that he tries to apply his wealth and, like, his vision for using his wealth is basically like a Hail Mary to, like, he's actually doing what Elon Musk wishes he could do, and, like, trying to solve, like, create a solution for interstellar exit. This is like taking, the podcast is taking a very interesting turn, because I'm the last one to typically be on this side of the argument, but that's my take.
No, I think there's something for the, like, CEO bringing an enormous amount of value to the business. But the opposite extreme is also true. For example, the CEO of JCPenney, this was also an Atlantic article. He makes like 1800 times more than his lowest paid employee. And I can't, we can link out to that article, I can find it, but all he did was accelerate the demise of the company. You know, in the same fashion, and the next CEO is going to be paid just as much. I'm sure that he's already exited that role, which is why The Atlantic was talking about it, but the next CEO will get paid the same amount. You know, so I think, you know, per the, like, I don't know, the value that a CEO can bring, is it worth the amount of money that Jeff Bezos is worth? I don't think there should ever be somebody with that much wealth in the world.
What did you have, Jess? Because I also have a submission for this.
Well, one thing that I would like to share with you about Haymarket Books is that they only have one review, and it's from Eddie Vedder, saying that Haymarket Books is his favorite publisher, and I quote, "I try to read as many books, as many of their books as I can. If I had the time, I'd read every single one." I mean, you can't get a better bookstore review than that.
Such is the way of the world.
Except maybe if it were in inspiring, like, an acoustic early performance.
Jeremy Spoken. That was a Pearl Jam reference.
No, I loved it. I didn't really like it.
Yeah, I have two submissions. One, Jeff Bezos as the host of the Mayonnaise Ritual.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think he fits because he looks like a sculpted blob of mayonnaise. Two,
that's mean.
Something we've also referenced in the early days of our podcast is something that you referenced, Stephen, the pissing contest between Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, which is something that I love deeply, where they're both literally trying to be like, who built a bigger rocket? which, you know, the metaphor, to call it thinly veiled, is, you know, probably a stretch. It is literally them being like, my rocket's bigger or faster. Look how big it is. Look at its shape. It's wonderful. And the idea of, like, that continued pissing contest about their ability to explore space went all the way down to both of them and a lot of, you know, tech nerd types of folks are obsessed with the Culture series by Ian M. Banks, and Elon Musk was naming his rockets after the Culture series, like, in that sort of naming nomenclature. And then Jeff Bezos bought the rights to the Culture Series to make shows out of it because he was like, oh, cool, you like the Culture Series? I own it now. Fuck you.
I love pettiness in all of its forms.
I do appreciate that immensely.
Can I popcorn to myself
on my
last tweet?
No, yep. You can't. I already chose Alex.
Okay.
Oh, but I just went.
That's okay.
Okay. my next submission for this is one of benevolence and brotherhood. It is from a woman named Diana Chris, at underscore Diana Chris, spelled with K. During Zoom meetings, I unmute myself to laugh at a homie's joke. You can't just let jokes go unhyped. You gotta support the homies. I
respect this.
Yeah, if I was in control of our, all hands agency meetings, anytime we clapped, laughed, I would ask everybody to unmute so we can have a moment of chaos. But yet we don't do that. We do the little, fake clap in the background, and it's very orderly. And you
the
can
silent
appreciate.
Zoom golfers clap.
Exactly.
Yeah, golf clap. Golf
exactly
clap.
That. But sometimes I lay awake at night dreaming about what it would be like to embrace the chaos.
I was literally thinking at the beginning of this meeting while we were getting set up and technologically organized that I am truly the embodiment of chaotic good. Like, that is how I think of myself. And in so many Zoom meetings, including client Zoom or Hangout meetings, whatever it is, I am constantly like the person who is just like unmuting for 6 seconds to say something absurdly stupid and then remuting to be like, let it marinate. Where's this going to go? Right before we started recording this, we were in like a company happy hour and I was just like chiming in 6 seconds every, 5 minutes just to be like, here is a really bad dad joke. You're welcome. See you later.
Joey, I feel like that is also true in real life. It's just more pronounced in the virtual setting.
Very true.
I will say I'm resonating with this a lot, mainly because I appreciate that chaotic good about you. And also my Twitter bio right this moment is chaotic good.
I appreciate that.
I would argue that calling yourself chaotic good is lawful evil.
Steven, can we put in our show notes the grid of lawful to chaotic, good to evil map that you did of our office bathrooms? Yes. Do you want to describe it briefly?
I don't know if I'll be able to remember it. Yes. For those of you who haven't been to the New York office, we haven't been in several weeks either. there are, like any office, there are like certain rituals that come with using the office bathroom, just in terms of where it's placed in the building, the times of day people typically need to go, 10 a.m., 2 p.m., like most offices, the coffee break, the post-lunch poo. But there are a series of behaviors that are quite common as it relates to our bathroom. And so one day I built one of the, I forget what they're called, the character mappings for behaviors as it relates to bathroom usage at Zomain Labs. And we should absolutely put it in the show notes.
Yeah. It involved being chaotic evil if you poop in the first bathroom.
Oh, 100%. Right?
Oh, yes. For sure. You got to go all the way.
Absolutely
to the
chaotic
wall.
Evil. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't even work out of that office, and I completely agree with that there.
Yeah. There's actually a really fascinating study that was done at one point about the hygiene of toilets in men's bathrooms. And that everyone, most men have this thing where they assume that the first toilet is the one that people use the most because it's the closest to the door. And so no one uses that toilet to poop. And they studied the concentration of fecal matter across all toilets. And the dirtiest toilet is the one farthest to the back, the handicapped stall where everyone tries to go. Fascinating.
Everyone thinks they're being sneaky, but really they're not being sneaky. Wow. I love that a lot. It makes tons of sense. I also have gotten into many a debate with friends, family, the like, about the appropriate standing position for the toilet seat lid, depending on you know, what type of bathroom, but for instance, a public bathroom, I was wondering if you had a show of hands of what you thought was the appropriate, you know, resting position for the toilet seat lid.
Down.
Wait, is this for a men's bathroom?
Public bathroom to be used by anyone.
Down.
And
down.
It has a lid?
There is both lid and seat, and I would say you can also adjust your response depending on if it has both or only one.
Under no circumstances should you ever close the lid of a public toilet. Why would you?
If it's a public toilet in an office space that you work in, you should always close the toilet because aerosolized feces. I will leave you with aerosolized feces. The spray of flushing just shoots a plume into the air.
Right, but do you ever close the toilet before you flush? Because I don't believe you.
Okay. I do, always.
Yes.
Okay, always. Hold on. Is this, sorry, I'm about to out myself as like, apparently like a slob or maybe perhaps something worse. Is that why people close the lid? I thought it was like a manners thing. Like you close the lid to not get shit air.
Yeah.
Poop air, sorry, Alex, poop
and,
air.
And a benefit too, if it's, especially if it's a public toilet, is you always require the next user to lift to whatever is the appropriate height for their version of whatever they need to take care of in the bathroom, versus if you leave the seat up or the lid up but the seat down, you may have men and women alike, I honestly would say even more often women, who attempt to delicately engage in the squatting technique, which is never a more sanitary method, certainly with the seat down.
Mm. I'm still sort of like deeply shaken by the idea that like I've never really understood the point of a toilet lid.
Wow.
Yeah, this is devastating. I am gonna immediately pivot to my tweet so I don't have to think about this any longer. Because this is one of the worst things that's ever happened to me. our last tweet of the day from Laurel, that's at Release the Doves. RuPaul be like, fuck it, Gigi win again, can't wait to get out here and frack. This is a wonderful tweet for a lot of reasons, because it involves the LGBTQ community's relationship with RuPaul, RuPaul's bad behavior, and the current dynamics of not only this season of RuPaul's Drag Race, but historically the legacy of RuPaul's Drag Race. So to give you a very abbreviated...
Yes, I need a primer. I have no idea what's happening.
So,
like, I know who RuPaul is.
Yes.
Okay. And that's it. And I know what Drag Race is.
Okay. RuPaul's Drag Race, famed Logo TV transfer to VH1 television show, currently on its, I believe, 13th season, has had some highs and lows in terms of how it's been received by the public. Each season kind of has its like specific kinks that have had to been worked through. There are a series of kinks that are happening on this season of RuPaul's Drag Race specifically. But historically, one of the biggest challenges is that people feel as if the hand of the producer is very, very visible, that often storylines are created, that people will win challenges or lose challenges or be sent home as a result of producers trying to like create as much drama as possible. If you're not familiar, gay men especially enjoy being dramatic. And so if you're not familiar. So this season especially, there has been a storyline of Gigi Good, a drag queen from New York City, winning a series of challenges over and over and over again, which people feel is the producers making her the obvious front runner for the season, who will either be dethroned by like a queen that you don't expect, or it'll just make for really, really boring television. A lot of the concerns about the editing, though, have to do with another kind of real life drama that's happening, which is one of the queens was outed before the season aired for catfishing a series of men on dating apps and forcing them to like do crazy things on camera. And so they've tried to edit her out of the season as much as possible, but there's a lot of implications in terms of if that person wins, who she interacts with on the television show, like how the storylines are built, you know, building these plot arcs is like a really complicated game. All of this sits right below a major cultural happening where it was revealed that a lot of RuPaul's money is made by leasing the mineral rights to their property in the Midwest to a series of oil companies that use it for fracking. And so people are obviously, I mean, people have a very fraught relationship with RuPaul. She has said some like fairly transphobic comments over the past couple of years, and there has very much been a focus on restoring RuPaul's image as she tries to, like, you know, kind of win the gays back over. And so this tweet sort of encapsulates all of these things in one. RuPaul be like, fuck it. Gigi win again when she should not because she was not the best in the challenge. Everyone knows that just Jan deserved to win the musical challenge about Madonna. Can't wait to get out of here and frack. That is the tweet.
Wow, that what a performance. Honestly, this is a moment to truly let the homies know that they've done it.
Thank you very much.
Aaron is so upset that he's not here right now for this. He it's is, true. Like, devastated. This is so much packed into one tweet. It's incredible.
This is my, I have had a working theory. I think I've talked about it with every single one of you before, which is this idea of memes or compression. That, like, we have always historically, not always historically, we have treated, like, the past several years, we've treated video as the best form of communication for conveying a lot of information very quickly, when in fact it has to do with, like, layering and building off of existing knowledge that people already have. And so this is a great example of, there are, like, 14 different references and pieces of knowledge necessary to, like, unlock this tweet.
Yeah. This is like, there is this concept that we came up with like years ago of this idea of like a humble flag that we wrote a piece about and was recently, which is a humble brag, I suppose, was like included in some kind of college curriculum or like textbook or something. But this idea of a humble flag is basically like a demonstration of like all of these hidden things that you wouldn't be able to understand if you weren't in group. And like, this is like perfectly that. Like, if you're in group, this says so much, right? Like, what is this? This is like 15 words or something. And basically it took you, you know, 5 minutes to be able to describe everything that was packed into it. I'm like blown away.
Yeah, it's a wild, wild tweet. And it's wonderful. And watch RuPaul's Drag Race. I mean, it's happening in roughly an hour and 10 minutes, but I guess when the listeners at home hear this, watch in 4 days.
Are you part of any RuPaul's Drag Race, like, fantasy league things that exist?
I am not part of a fantasy league. I am part of a Facebook spinoff group dedicated to RuPaul's Drag Race, which is an offshoot of a podcast I listen to regularly. Yes.
Wow. What is a Facebook spinoff group?
So there is a podcast called Who Weekly that is very popular, and there is a Facebook group for hooligans, the demonym for Who Weekly fans.
Gotcha.
And if there are lots of spinoff groups of that group for people who self-identify as a hooligan but also have separate interests. So there's the hooligan skincare group. There is the drag race group. There is one for every conceivable interest. I'm a part of 5 or 6.
there's so much here.
How many total groups are you a part of? Groups.
On like, Facebook?
Yes, yes.
Probably 30.
Are you an active contributor to all of those or just the Who groups?
Probably actively contributing to 5.
Got you, the Who groups, yes, yes.
The Who groups.
Is this one of them?
Well, it's called RuPaul's Drag Race. Yes, that is one of them.
No, but this is one of the ones you're actively contributing to?
Correct, yeah. I live chat every week with the group.
Oh, yeah. He's about watching. To log in at 1 hour and 9 minutes.
That's correct. Guys, I do know I've been talking for the past 12 minutes, but I would like to say I think I can do the 6 degrees of Kevin Costner with these tweets.
Excellent.
Oh my god.
We've now arrived. We are at 6 handshakes, people.
Oil money.
we need to workshop these 6 tweets, and for everyone listening, allow me to recap. Our first tweet from Joey, an investigative TikTok about hair growth. Our second tweet from Steven about worms and splitting them into two boyfriends. Again, from Joey, the third tweet about enormous baby then and now. Our fourth tweet from Alex about Bezos' wealth and potentially him being more hardworking than literally everyone. The fifth tweet also from Alex about Zoom and muting or unmuting. And finally, our sixth tweet from Steven about RuPaul, Gigi, and oil money.
Should I take a stab?
I would love for you to take a stab.
Okay, so I'm starting with, in order to make this work, we have to start with enormous baby then and now. So enormous baby is famously seen as enormous, again, semiotically, because of Gavin's very thin hair, which connects us to the TikTok regarding hair length, specifically the referencing the investigative TikTok about hair growth. The next connection is that, and if my boyfriend was a worm, we're both originally from TikTok, or both originated from the platform. Nice. Boyfriend was a worm. Bookworm, Haymarket Books, reference to Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos and RuPaul both doing questionable things or earning their money in questionable through questionable means. And finally, RuPaul's Drag Race, if you're an insider, it is historically known that throughout the season, the queens will start to fight more. They will no longer get along. And it is commonly said that this is RuPaul's Drag Race, not RuPaul's best friend race. And best friends, you unmute on the Zoom for because you support the homies.
Wait, oh, wow. Steven, we're missing something.
No, we're not.
We need to tie Zoom muting back to enormous baby.
Got it. Okay, this is where I'm going to call in the group. How do we connect unmuting on Zoom meetings to enormous babies?
When you are having a relationship for a 90-day fiance, in order to get that fiance, it's long distance, and there's a lot of Zoom courting that is happening as part of that.
That is 100% true.
That works. I would also say that there's one about the baby. When you when you're on a conference call, you use Zoom often. And when you have a family and maybe a newborn or a toddler that looks like it has three toddlers inside of it, you mute yourself on Zoom, thus enormous baby.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. As someone who child you may hear over the course of this podcast that in different intervals, I can affirm that 100%.
Yeah, wow, guys, this is I mean, who would have thought that the enormous baby was the friends we made along the way, you know?
Okay, can I do it just a final recap?
Yes, absolutely.
Just okay. Wrap up Six Handshake Corner.
Enormous baby. And thereby hair, such that we get to investigative TikTok about hair growth. Bringing us to, because also TikTok, worms. And since we're talking about worms, bookworms, Bezos' wealth. And on top of that, Bezos, we're not so sure how he made his money, and therefore we should also think about RuPaul and his oil money. And I honestly cannot tell you how that connects to Zoom muting. But I can tell you that whether it's a long distance relationship or muting your toddlers, that brings us back to enormous baby and 90 day fiance participant. May he be unnamed.
We're at six handshakes.
We're at six handshakes.
Six handshakes.
Do we think this was a successful experiment? Where do we stand?
I think we're going to have to leave it up to our listeners. So if you want to like and subscribe to our podcast, you can find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. We'd love to hear from you.
Right. And if you hate it, you'll have to also do those things.
And you can tweet about us in some sort of memetic fashion.
That would be good.
Yeah, this possibly could be the best critical nonsense that's ever happened. I think
are
that
you
might
self-selecting
be,
for the single one might, that you've been on?
I don't. No. Well, yes, absolutely. I am a huge fan of myself. But I will say that I'm an even bigger fan of Twitter. Thanks, Jack.
Wow. Thanks, Jack.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in Who Knows Where We Are Studios in, again, Who Knows Where.
As always, we want to thank executive producer and now once again appropriate nerd herder, Jess Vander.
Thanks.
We'd also like to thank our special guest, Stephen Ebert, who wanted to be identified as token gay guest, and Alex Anderson, who wanted to be identified as the best of Twitter.
Yes, agreed.
We have to thank Alex Contell, who is our sound engineer and also a supreme internet doodler. Perhaps we should look out for his future memes. Only time will tell.
As always, we'd like to thank Nora Mestrich for our beautiful cover art and for her continued ability to stand.
And to thank our production help from Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vong, may we ever appreciate your silent golfer claps on Zoom.
And as always, thanks, Elaine.
Thank you. Before we get into our typical round of special thanks, may I please have the honor of doling out completely irrelevant awards for our tweet shares today?
You may have that honor.
Okay. To start, I would like to award to Alex Anderson a bonus of incredible artistic ability for his improv of the new show, The Mayonnaise Ritual, otherwise perhaps coined the Aioli Protocol, 200 points.
Wow.
Thank you. Wow. Wow. I'm honored. Incredible. Wow.
For his inimitable hot take, may we please thank Stephen Ebert for admitting he's not a big fan of Bezos and might even be pro-Bezos. Stephen, 101 points.
Oh, no.
Can he be his biggest fan? He might be.
I hate this.
I hope it's what you're always known for.
To Joey for sneaking in an extra tweet where he shouldn't have, a bonus negative 20 points. That Mark Warner tweet sandwich.
Mark Warner's tweet sandwich is terrible. We'll add it to the show notes.
And finally, for an additional 100 points, to Stephen Ebert for admitting he had no idea what a lid for a toilet was for, we award you an extra 100 points.
Well, you just won the points game, but I don't feel like you won.
Yeah, for being pro-billionaire and ignorant about toilet etiquette. Thank you so much. Like many people on tech Twitter, I got here sort of by accident. So I'm...
Is that your first special thanks to tech Twitter?
Special thanks to tech Twitter for inspiring me to take a dubious win and not realize it.
Yeah. I'd like to give a special thanks to Shay Serrano again. I feel like we maybe have thanked him in the past, but that guy just fucking wins Twitter and life. He is like a good human, just fucking doling it out to people who need it more than him. And he's hilarious and he loves Scrubs. It's just like win, win, win.
Plus one on that. Way to go. Nicely done, Shay.
Special thanks to Joey K. Meyer's Coffered Ceilings. Glad to get a peek into your apartment, Joey, and to know what success looks like. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, someday you can get on me and Jeff Bezos level.
Special thanks to the very specific Twitter account VCs congratulating themselves for always reminding us of the blessed ego that is Silicon Valley and beyond.
Special thanks to Diet Coke. That's all.
That's all of it. Yeah.
That's all.
Special thanks to alcohol because we've become close over this break.
Yeah.
But also not too close. Drink responsibly.
You can always drink responsibly when you're trapped inside your own apartment.
Wow. I don't think that's actually how that works. But.
Yeah, it's not true. That's not true. Don't take my advice.
Not how that works.
Yeah.
Special thanks to my miniature fiddle fig leaf plant, as we have also grown very close over this quarantine period.
Wow. That's
special.
Yeah.
It's grown direction?
What was that?
Oh, just making a closeness joke.
If fiddly figs are a commitment.
Reaching. Yeah.
That's a commitment. That's like getting a cockatiel. Those things last
really
a long time.
Quit.
Yeah. Special thanks to our coworker Trevor Larry for teaching me that it is a fiddle leaf fig and not a fiddly fig, which I did think it was for several years of my life.
Wow.
Did he catch you and say, please pause, repeat yourself?
That is correct. I was 26.
I'm pretty sure I just said fiddle fig leaf, which is fine. Also incorrect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Trevor's scorn, I'd like to give a special thanks to Trevor's scorn, which is extremely subtle and it makes it hurt more. All right. Thank you all.
Thank
Love your
you
faces.
All.
Merry Christmas.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
Alex, do you have any special thanks? Alex isn't recording himself, and he said he's not thankful for, he has no gratitude.
May I report as Chief Corrections Department Officer that Alex Contell has plenty of gratitude. He's just incapable of sharing it right now.
Got it.
Test. Wow, my levels look great.
Hello. Oh, nice.